Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated February 2nd, 2016. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined, Fuel Tax Gains Tentative OK. And the dateline is Decatur. The article was written by Allison Petty. A majority of Decatur City Council members agreed Monday that they would support a local motor fuel tax to address the city's growing backlog of road repairs. Most of the council members indicated that they would support a tax of 5 cents per gallon on unleaded gasoline and 1 cent per gallon on diesel fuel. But opinions diverged on the subject of a sunset provision, allowing the tax to expire after a period of time unless a future council granted an extension. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf and City Manager Tim Gleason said after the meeting that they would confer this week and determine how to proceed. Moore Wolf said it is likely that an ordinance will be presented to the council for a vote at its next meeting, February 16th. She noted that the council has talked about establishing a motor fuel tax for years while the city's pavements continue to worsen. Realistically, we've got to get something done on these roads, she said. They're not magically going to get fixed. They're just going to continue to deteriorate. Gleason said city staff estimate that each cent would raise $250,000 to $300,000 based on figures from other communities. Councilman Bill Faber was the only council member who did not indicate some level of support, saying he would rather the council step back and take a look at its taxing policies overall. Councilman Chris Funk said the council needed to do something to address the roads and noted that most other central Illinois cities have established similar taxes. But he said he wanted to hear from businesses that would be affected by the change. Councilman Pat McDaniel reiterated his call for a 5-year sunset provision for the tax. Councilwoman Dana Ray agreed with that idea, but said she thought the sunset clause should occur after more than 5 years, given that the city has identified $21 million in needed repairs to the roads in the worst conditions. Councilwoman Lisa Gregory said she wanted to pass the tax soon so that some work could be undertaken this year and was not in favor of a sunset provision. Councilman Jerry Dawson said he didn't have strong feelings about a sunset provision. Gleason highlighted several ways that he said residents could feel confident that the money would be used for road projects. The council approves expenditures of more than $20,000, which would include most road work. Also, he said he would support creation of a city website that would identify every project funded with the money. The city's Public Works Department already has completed a master plan that identifies the streets in the most need. Gleason said the city would take a worst-first approach to the repairs, with the only potential exceptions coming in a case where a developer might be considering a larger investment in the community, such as new housing. This will be money well spent in areas that will not be covered by our existing state motor fuel tax, that will not be covered by our budget in the foreseeable future, he said. Council members have considered a local motor fuel tax, either as part of a larger look at city finances or in study sessions multiple times over the past 3 years. In November, the council tabled an ordinance that would have established the tax, with several members asking for more information. But four council members mentioned the tax specifically during a goals-setting discussion on January 19th, which prompted Gleason to revive the discussion Monday. We turn now to another front page article entitled, Heroes Help Without a Second Thought. American Red Cross announces 2016 award winners, written by Teresa Churchill. Awakened from a nap by a 5-year-old girl banging on his door, Larry Heath didn't think about anything but what had to be done. If he had, he might not have wrapped the girl in a blanket from his daughter's bed, sat her down inside, raced to the back of his neighbor's house, taken a deep breath, and plunged into a smoke-filled kitchen. A lot of smoke and flames were coming out the front, he recalls. I don't recommend anybody doing what I did. My daddy instincts kicked in when she said her grandpa was still inside. Heath, age 30, pulled the man to safety after stumbling across him on the kitchen floor. The Decatur man is this year's winner of the American Red Cross Everyday Hero Award and one of four heroes to be honored next month at the organization's annual Heroes Ball. The other honorees are, for youth, Reed Van Curen, 12, of Champaign, who called for help after he and his grandparents were stranded by a kayaking mishap along the Kaskaskia River east of Sullivan. Armed Forces Public Service Award goes to David Brodhacker, 49, of Macon, who saved a co-worker having a heart attack with skills he possesses as a volunteer with the South Macon Fire Protection District. The Red Cross Volunteer Award goes to Kirk Edgecombe, 59, of Forsyth, whose service to the Red Cross began in Gifford after it was hit by a tornado on November 17, 2013, and most recently involved 10 days helping flood victims a month ago in Kincaid and Petersburg. Edgecombe, a Cerro Gordo native who retired from the Postal Service in 2011, said he feels blessed to be able to help others in need. If we don't back each other up when we're in trouble, where would we be, he asks. Most of what Edgecombe did during the recent flooding involved feeding dive team members, other volunteers, and people displaced from their homes. He also spent New Year's Eve at Kincaid High School helping to run an emergency shelter set up in the gymnasium. Like Edgecombe, Heath doesn't want attention for what he did and gives credit to Decatur firefighters, who arrived at 2358 East William Street 2 minutes after he called 911 on December 7th and brought the fire under control within 10 minutes. The couple that lived in the house escaped with their granddaughter after the fire broke out in their living room shortly after 5 p.m. that day, but the man went back inside to get his pet dog, which was frightened and ran from him. After saving the man and alerting the fire department, Heath returned to the back door, propped it open, and called the dog's name, but it did not come out, was overcome by smoke, and could not be revived by firefighters. The man also suffered smoke inhalation, but was treated at a hospital and released. Heath, who cleans at Mueller Company for R.D. McMillan Enterprises and trims trees for Warrensburg Tree Service, has a son, Camden, 8, and daughter, Caitlin, 5. Decatur Fire Department Battalion Chief Dan Klein nominated Heath for the Heartland Hero Award. His neighbor credits Larry for saving his life after he selflessly entered the burning house, Klein writes. I praised him for his act of heroism. The top featured article for today is called Phil Set to Hog Spotlight Yet Again, and this was written by Tony Reed, H&R staff writer. There is a photograph accompanying this article, which is quite humorous. It is of a groundhog wearing a top hat and a blue ribbon pinned to the hat reads, Furry Forecaster. The dateline for the article is Punxsutawney. It begins this way. Now is the winter of our discontent. But will it be made glorious summer by this smelly Pennsylvania rodent called Punxsutawney Phil? Whether it is to be or not to be, many do believe that is the question that will be answered today when Phil the groundhog leaves his home in the namesake town of Punxsutawney and ascends a hill called Gobbler's Knob. If Phil sees his shadow and runs for cover, the weight of a tradition says we're in for 6 more weeks of winter weather. If no shadow is cast and Phil stays topside, we're set for an early spring. How on earth did we get saddled with this nonsense? It turns out it has a surprisingly long tradition, stretching all the way back to German immigrant farmers who settled in Pennsylvania. Macon County Conservation District naturalist Katina Williams, who presented a kids' program on the subject Sunday, said the farmers brought with them a kind of witchcraft tradition involving critter shadows and winter prognostication. Williams said the Germans had traditionally wandered around the woods on the Christian feast day of Candlemas, February 2nd, looking to see if pretty much any critter, from bears to hedgehogs, were casting any shadows. Newly arrived in the New World, they made do with the locally abundant indigenous wildlife and settled on shadow play involving the humble groundhog. The Groundhog Day tradition goes all the way back to the 1880s, and it became a superstition, said Williams. I've read that Phil, is supposed to be right 85% of the time. Punxsutawney Phil is carefully controlled and corralled by a shadowy groundhog club where a group of human acolytes known as the Inner Circle carefully orchestrate the media frenzy around Groundhog Day, now in its 130th year. The club makes other bold claims too, alleging Phil is the original forecasting rodent, able to buck the standard 6-year groundhog lifespan by consuming a special concoction called Groundhog Punch. Whether you believe all that or not, it keeps thousands of tourists and streams of TV satellite trucks rolling into Punxsutawney every year to watch the fat mammal strut his stuff. And this year's celebration will also see the arrival of a new beer, Punxsutawney Pilsner, with Phil stopping by the local Penn Brewery for the launch party. One Central Illinois group who probably won't be raising a glass in salute are the real meteorological experts at the National Weather Service office in Lincoln. "I guess we don't pay any attention to any groundhogs," said meteorologist Daryl Onton. He explained that the scientific view of winter in the world of meteorology says the frigid season kicks off in December and runs through January and February. Onton said our recent unseasonable warmness will be interrupted by a cold snap over the next week or so before returning to seasonal or above normal temps as February fades away. And as far as the longer-term outlook, February, March, and April, that looks to have slightly better odds of above normal temperatures, he added. Where does all that leave the degree of faith in Phil's perspicacity? One intensive study of his record, carried out by a weather website called StormFacts.com, crunched the numbers on 119 of his predictions and came up with an accuracy rate of 39%. That is worse than random chance and suggests the traditional way of interpreting the groundhog's shadow ought to be reversed. Here's another featured article. This one is written by Chris Luzvardi, and the headline is "Teachers Developing a New Approach to Teaching Science." Teachers from across the Decatur area assigned to implement a new set of science educational standards were brought together last week for a workshop at Archer Daniels Midland Company. ADM partnered with the Education Coalition of Macon County, or EDCO, to provide the training through the iBio Institute Educate Center. Teachers were encouraged about the changes that are taking place as they implement the next generation science standards in their classrooms. The new state mandated procedures emphasize real world applications of learning. "It's the wave of the future," said Elizabeth Bartimus, who teaches 7th and 8th grade science at Johns Hill Magnet School. "It's already changed the classroom. It's getting students engaged more and more. Children will need to learn how to find more information on their own," said Eric Schultz, who teaches at MacArthur High School. Schultz said the workshop was helping him think of ways to get students to ask more questions and improve their problem-solving skills. "The program is about helping students become career and college ready," said workshop instructor Karen Lindebreck, director of programs for the Educate Center. "The teachers are on the cutting edge of training," said Danny Kraft, EDCO executive director. "We're hoping they can take that experience Back to the classroom, Kraft said. It's a platform to create connections and be inspired about the future for the kids. By getting involved with the training, ADM is hoping to develop the kind of critical thinkers it will need, said Paul Bloom, the company's vice president of process and chemical research. Hopefully, it will help highlight what ADM does and how our products are developed along with all aspects of our business, Bloom said. We need the best people. There are opportunities for students, not just globally, but also locally. ADM's support helps show students they can have a really good job while staying in Decatur, said Philip Winicky, a 7th and 8th grade science teacher at Stephen Decatur Middle School. They can have a future living, raising their kids and working in Decatur, said Ashley Keeling, a teacher at Dennis School. Keeling said the workshop was a worthwhile opportunity to come together with a group of colleagues sharing in similar experiences. Kraft said 25 teachers from 10 area districts attended. She said additional training sessions will be offered this spring and summer. We turn now to news of crime and courts. This article was written by Huey Freeman, and the headline is Ex-Convict Allegedly Stabs Man for Giving Ex-Girlfriend Haircut. The dateline is Decatur, and it was written by Huey Freeman. A 49-year-old parolee who has served 12 prison terms is back in custody after he allegedly stabbed a man with a butcher knife who had been cutting the hair of his former girlfriend. Carl D. Walker was booked into the Macon County Jail, where he is being held without bond on charges of attempted murder, domestic battery, and criminal damage to property. In addition to stabbing the 39-year-old victim, he punched his 38-year-old ex-girlfriend in the mouth and damaged the male victim's vehicle by slashing tires and pouring sugar into its gas tank. When Decatur police officers arrived on the 1000 block of West Leafland Avenue about 1:20 a.m. Sunday, they saw a man, quote, standing over another male, Carl D. Walker, unquote, said an affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Jacqueline Welton. The standing man told police, "This man stabbed me." The victim said he was at the nearby home of his friend a short time ago giving her a haircut. Walker was upset about the 39-year-old male being at her home, so he started arguing with his ex-girlfriend. The woman then told Walker to leave. Before leaving her home, Walker punched her in the mouth, the male victim told police. A short time later, the male victim received a phone call from a relative who told him there was possibly someone outside near his vehicles at his residence a couple of blocks away. When he ran home, he saw that his GMC Denali parked on the street had 3 flat tires. Quoting again the victim, as he walked up the driveway of its residence, he could hear the sound of air escaping a tire. This is from the police report. He observed Carl near his other vehicle in the driveway, a 2007 red Jeep Cherokee, near the gas tank. He saw that Walker had a knife in his hand. He ran up to him to try to, quote, gain control of the knife, the victim told police. Walker then, these are quotes, stabbed him several times in the back. The victim said he took the knife away from Walker and threw it over a fence. The victim said he believed Carl's intent was to kill him. If he hadn't moved so quickly, the stab wounds would have most likely been in his chest rather than his back and shoulder. He suffered three puncture wounds to his upper back, multiple lacerations on the back of his left hand, a laceration to his right index finger, and a bruise to his right bicep. The woman who confirmed what happened at her home suffered a cut lip. Walker, who was released from prison October 15th, is due in court for his arraignment by Monday. Let's find out what writers are asking Abby today. Dear Abby, we recently bought a new home and have discovered that our elderly neighbors are caring for their grandson's dog. The dog lives in a 3 by 6 foot area right next to our patio. The poor animal receives little attention and is rarely cleaned up after. As a consequence, our patio reeks of dog feces and we are overwhelmed by flies. I feel bad for the couple and I resent the grandson for allowing his dog to be neglected and for failing to have any consideration for the stench that makes our patio off limits to us. How can I politely ask my new neighbors to clean up after their dog so that we can enjoy our new home without offending them or creating a bad neighbor situation? The letter is signed Shoofly in Bakersfield, California. Dear Shoofly, if your neighbors are unable to properly care for their grandson's dog, they shouldn't have it. A dog is a responsibility. The animal needs feeding, exercise, social contact, and to be cleaned up after. To shirk that responsibility is cruel. It would not be offensive to inform these neighbors that the odor and flies from their dog run are so overwhelming that they prevent you from enjoying your patio. Speak up or they'll think you haven't noticed. If this continues, call animal control or a pet rescue group. We'll have to return to Abby perhaps later in the broadcast. Now we need to take a short break, and I'll return with the second half hour of the February 2nd issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.